Hi, I'm Adil Bandukwala.
And I'm Kaushik Satish, and this is the Great Indian Marketing Show, where we go behind the scenes with top marketing leaders.
We uncover not just what marketers do, but how. We're stoked to have with us today Leandro Perez, Vice President and CMO Asia Pacific at Salesforce, the world's number one customer relationship management platform. Leandro leads marketing across the Asia Pacific region for Salesforce.
Previously at Salesforce, he led the global corporate messaging team, which is responsible for crafting and disseminating the Salesforce corporate narrative to 50,000 employees and millions of customers globally each year. He's worked for TIBCO, HP, and Autonomy, and holds a Bachelor of Computer Science from the University of New South Wales.
Born in Argentina, raised in Sydney, with extensive time abroad in the United States, Leandro now lives in Sydney with his wife and two children. Leandro, welcome to the Great Indian Marketing Show. How are you feeling today?
Thanks for having me. I'm excited, and that was quite the intro, so let's do this.
All right, Leandro, let's just jump in. Leandro, you started your career as a programmer, very interestingly, then turned into a sales engineer and then a solutions consultant. How did you shift to product marketing? When you started your career, did you know that in a couple of decades, you'd be running a marketing org in APAC for one of the world's most admired brands?
Look, the short answer is no. I had no clue that was on the cards. I would say that if I looked at it in that time, I probably thought I was going to be doing programming for many, many years, right? But I think I like to think of it as a series of sliding door moments that I vividly remember that's led me down this path. Do you want me to jump in and share a little bit about those?
Absolutely, yes.
So look, you know, there's a really long version of this and I'll try to be brief here. But like I said, I've had these sliding door moments and I really think of them as that because every 4 or 5 years before Salesforce, and then because everything's faster at Salesforce, it's probably every 2 years at Salesforce, things have come my way that have made me radically change where my career trajectory was going. So like you mentioned in the intro, I went to University of New South Wales. I was set on, you know, I loved computing, loved computers from an early age, everything to do with tech. And so I thought being a programmer was what I was going to do. And 5 years into that, you know, I realized that I love programming and actually I still love the things I learned, the logic, how you approach problems, how you solve problems. But I realized there was a bit of a lack of interaction with people in that process. You know, you would get a task and you'd go off for 8, 10, 12 hours and solve a problem by yourself in your own head. And I'm a very social person. So I really felt like I was missing half of my personality. And so, you know, one of these sliding door moments was when a recruiter reached out to me and said, would you be interested in doing pre-sales? And, you know, at the time, I had no idea what that even was. And they're like, oh, you know, you would go and help describe the technology that you've built. And sometimes you need to customize it. And I'm like, well, that kind of sounds pretty cool. I get to still keep my technology skill, but now I can actually talk to the value proposition. So I took that approach. And that was when I joined Autonomy. Autonomy, for those folks that I know, later got acquired by HP, was a leading enterprise search provider. And that was an exciting time. And this kind of started this train where, so now I was not only just looking at technology, I was talking about technology. This led me down to another company called TIBCO, who reached out to me to lead their sort of cloud technologies. And at the time, this is like 15 plus years ago, cloud wasn't really that much of a thing. And so like me, I always try new things, novel things. I said, sure, I'll try it out. And of all things, actually, it was a cloud BI product that we were selling, which BI at the time was mostly on-premise desktop products. And so a browser-based solution, people really, especially the data scientists, they weren't really into that. And then with TIBCO also, I helped launch a collaboration product. You know, think even before Slack, even before chat, or way before all this stuff. And so this actually got me into this new challenge was, how do you not only know technology, then you have to describe it, but how do you help people understand the value of that technology? And that is what product marketing is for me, right? Really understanding what the value of a product is, sharing that value proposition with the customer, really seeing it light up in their eyes that like, huh, I didn't think of that. That would be amazing. And so that got me down onto this whole nother path where, again, new sliding door moment was I was doing this kind of locally in Sydney for Asia Pac with these cloud products. And I had a tap on the shoulder from, at the time, he was the president of this division in Palo Alto. And the gentleman said, would you like to come over and help us lead product marketing for these new products? Because this is still new for us. You know, you've had great success in Asia Pac. I had helped sell some of the deals to some of the big customers like KPMG in Australia. And they said, we want to replicate that around the world. Again, I didn't really know what formal product marketing even was, right? I was like, look, this sounds interesting because I feel like I've been doing some of this. And so, look, I took the leap. I talked to my wife. We had two young kids at the time. And so it was a big move to go to Silicon Valley. Like you said, I'd been born in Argentina, but I'd spent the majority of my youth here in Australia. So this was a big move. So we did it. It was supposed to be 2 years. I ended up spending 8 years actually in the US with multiple stops. But that was really my first foray into product marketing. And I got all sorts of exciting opportunities like launching products over there, working with analysts, defining product vision, setting up digital websites for all sorts of things. Like, it was a very exciting time. Unfortunately, that success was a little bit slowed down when the company got acquired by Vista Equity. It was a private firm that took it over. And this is so funny to say now, but they were like, no, we're going to double down on all the on-prem technology, right? Like, cloud is a bit expensive. You guys are losing a bit of money here. I'm like, come on, this is the future. So when I started to hear that, I was like, all right, we'll see what we can do. And Salesforce reached out. And at that point in time, you know, I knew of Salesforce. They were doing amazing things. We were coming up against them in a few areas, partnering in a few others. But they came to me with a really, really interesting proposition was, would you like to help launch Analytics Cloud? Which for me was putting together a few of the things that I'd done before, right? Bringing something that traditionally was an on-premise thing. I'd done some of it before at TIBCO, but this was now with the power of Salesforce behind it. These were much bigger budgets, much bigger audience. That was Stephanie Buscemi, who ended up becoming the CMO of Salesforce like a year later. She hired me and I went over to Salesforce and wow, like that was next level stuff, right? Like, we had a way bigger distribution team. We had way more resources. Mark at the time was very excited about analytics space. So I did that for a little while. And like I said, before this, it used to be 5 years that I would do something and I would have these moments, the sliding door moments. Now at Salesforce, it really became every year or 2 years, there was a new opportunity because we were growing so fast. So a year into that, I had been going around the world talking about Analytics Cloud in some of our events. And I got tapped on the shoulder again by a gentleman that later became my boss saying if I wanted to lead corporate messaging. Now, you mentioned in the intro, I did not know what corporate messaging was before this, but it was really taking a level up again, which was not just talking about one product, but talking about our whole portfolio. How do you talk about all the products at Salesforce? And I was like, that sounds interesting because we started off with one product at Salesforce, which was Sales Cloud, but now we have so many. How do you describe that? So that became something that I accepted. It was really, really cool because I got to work eventually with our CEO and all the executive leadership team, really helping craft that message, which I did and I enjoyed doing for many, many years. But I did promise my wife, going back to the story, that we would come back after 2 years, and it now had become 8. So when this next sliding door moment was to lead the team in Asia Pac for all marketing, I couldn't pass it up. And that's where I landed last year and where I am now. So that's the short version of that question.
That is such an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing that, Leandro. If I could ask you a follow-up question there, did you have to also evangelize at a point in time for any particular company? Because you're trying to create new categories of products. And while offshore's typically written the playbook for evangelism at Salesforce, but I'd love to understand, like, what are your learnings? And how does a marketer draw the line between marketing and evangelism?
It's a good question. Look, I'm someone, like I said, I love technology and I would never work at a company where I didn't love the products that I was using. Anytime that I've joined a company, I've usually become like ground zero. Like, I want to go in there. I want to use the product, even if it's not designed for me, right? I really want to go and become an expert in the product. And by default, I, as you can tell, I'm a pretty passionate person. I become pretty passionate about the product. So whether it's pre-sales, whether it's product marketing, whether it's corporate messaging, I think that to be an effective marketer, you do need to have some sort of connection with what you're describing. And that helps you empathize with the person that you're trying to convince to also be excited about that. Now, I would say the fine line between evangelism, sure, sometimes. And look, this usually comes from people that go beyond what they understand of the product, where they sort of sell vision that doesn't quite exist, or maybe that is a few years out. And sometimes you need that, right? Because if it's a startup or if it's a new product, you really are selling what's in your head or what's in the minds of the developers. So it is a fine line, but I'd say that you can't really, in my mind, be an amazing, amazing marketer or any of those other roles if you don't have some sort of passion to talk about the product.
100%. I think that's very well said, Leandro. Leandro, digging into your current role as CMO for the Asia Pacific region at Salesforce, what are your core priorities today?
Yeah, look, the core priorities, I would say, are three things. Number one, I look after an incredible team, and it's my job to make sure that they want to come every day. And I like to call our team a destination team, right? I want them to come to Salesforce. And, you know, of course, obviously people have opportunities elsewhere, but I really want them to be able to flourish like I have at Salesforce. You know, this is like my fourth career at Salesforce here, let alone overall. Second is growth. And I'll dig into a little bit what I mean by that. And then third is I am the regional alignment of our executives in the region, right? I have to make that connection. So to back up to my team, I think there's many things that are said and done about teams and how to look after them. But Salesforce does a really good job equipping me with a lot of tools and a lot of data on, you know, we do surveys on how the team is going twice a year. We do great leader surveys to understand how I'm doing as a manager. I use that data to understand, you know, what are the pain points for my team? What can I do better? Where do they want to grow? So there's a lot that goes into that every single day. And, you know, with leadership, it's really never done your job. You can always be better. You can always be doing more. And I inspire my team to really want to do the best work of their lives at Salesforce. The second would be growth. I definitely wouldn't have a job if I wasn't driving growth in all sorts of areas of the business, right? Whether it's our brand, whether it's our pipeline, our customer base, our community, and ultimately the success of our customers. I think that you can call it many things, you can come at it from many directions, but we are a growth company and marketing really is the engine behind that growth. Obviously, we have sales that help, you know, close those transactions or helps manifest or crystallize that work. But without what we do, it wouldn't happen, which is why our marketing is so important, not only to the company, but to our CEO, Mark Benioff. And now more than ever with COVID, we've all had to change our plans. I would say this actually is very, very important, how you find new ways to make connections. And the last is that regional alignment. For smaller companies, this is probably immaterial, but as you become a bigger company, it's really important that your regions understand what's happening at headquarters and can leverage the resources, can leverage what's happening. It's one of the reasons I got this role. I knew so many people at our headquarters that I was able to now, when I have a problem, I can send a message on Slack or I can pick up the phone, I can set up a meeting. And, you know, I can meet that person. It's not the first time I'm chatting to them and discuss an issue. I can ask for help. It's a bit hard during COVID, but I could bring them out to the APAC region. I can bring them to India. I can bring them to Sydney. I can bring them to whatever we're doing. And that's really important because we move so fast that it's very easy to actually go off the rails and start doing your own thing. And at a company the size of Salesforce, that's really not a good idea.
Thank you for that, Leandro. You cut your teeth in B2B marketing in the US, as you said. I think you spent about 8 years over there before you moved to APAC early last year, if I'm right, just as the pandemic.
Just as it all. Yes. Yeah.
I was very curious to sort of learn from you. What are the key differences that you are seeing in how tech marketing or B2B marketing was done in the US versus how you guys are approaching and doing it here in the APAC region? Is there anything that you could talk to us from your experience over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's really interesting. When I first came into the region, the majority of the marketing in the region is B2C marketing, right? I think being in Silicon Valley, I'm just so used to B2B marketing. So of course, there's big B2C brands, but B2B marketing is just so much bigger because you've got all the big companies that are founded there. So when I first came into the region, I really struggled looking for other people to connect with. You know, I'm obviously building my network here as well, but I'm seeing a lot more maturity growing. You know, even in the 2 years that I've been there, there's been a lot of growth. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, I would say a lot of focus is done on the regional tactical plays. And I was knowing at HQ where you would talk about the brand, you would talk about the main messages. And, you know, usually that's done at the headquarters. And so I found that there was a real deficiency in the region at having those conversations at that altitude. Like, what should we call this thing? You know, is that the right messaging hierarchy that we should have? Usually in, you know, regional teams, they kind of just take what they're given there and then they use it. And so I'm trying in my team and, you know, with even the companies and customers I talk to elevate that conversation. And then sort of the next step of that is, well, how do you tell that story? Because a big part, and you mentioned our deal, is like storytelling. And, you know, our CEO is famous for his evangelism. Like, that is a big part of how you sell a vision, right? What is that thing that's going to excite someone? And sometimes you're selling on them on something that doesn't exist, right?
Yeah,
or something that's very, very new. So they're the big differences. I would say beyond that, sometimes adoption of technology is a bit slower, I would say. Like, people are much more willing to take risks in the US on anything brand new. You know, they'll try it out. They'll throw it away quicker as well. But I feel like we're much more risk averse and trying to understand, well, how's that really going to roll out? And I think sometimes things can be a bit messier in the US, but they'll be faster. Yeah. And that's what I really noticed at first. Now, being here almost a couple of years, I always try to keep that beginner's mind and make sure I don't lose that and become, you know, stasis with what I see around me. But they're things I keep top of mind for sure.
Yeah. One thing that I've noticed is, you know, while we call it APAC, it's actually 6 to 8 different countries with different languages. And what works in one doesn't work in the other. The channels are different. So I don't know if that is something that you have seen as well. I mean, it's not necessarily a very heterogeneous region, right? And it's got a lot of diversity going for it as well.
Absolutely, which is why actually the way I structure my team is I have regional leads, a leader for India, a leader for what we call ASEAN, which is Singapore, Thailand, Philippines, Malaysia, all those Southeast nations, a leader for Australia, New Zealand, and a leader for Greater China. And I think that's really important because I'm based in Sydney and it's very easy for me to make a decision based on what I think is right for all of APAC. But to your point, that's not true, right? And we also have leaders. We call them regional CEOs in those countries to make sure that we have representatives there that can also push that up, not just from marketing, but from the other sort of distribution point of view. I think that's really, really important because increasingly, especially of a company of our size, our customers want us to talk to them, you know, like locals, right?
Yeah,
and you can't do that with a one size fits all. And it goes from everything, right? It's the values that we have, you know, and how we reflect those values for the region that we're in, the campaigns that make sense, the products make sense. Like a really simple example, just over the weekend, we launched our latest What is CRM ads on all the social networks. And very simple change is we put local dialects for the voiceovers for all of them, right?
Yeah.
And I brought in my daughter's 13 and I said, do you want to hear something fun? I said, let me play the 6 variations of dialect and just how different it is across the region, right? And now listen to the American one. And it's amazing how much of an impact that can have, right?
Yeah. You spoke about what your core priorities as a CMO are. You know, how does the day-to-day pan out for you? How does it begin? What do you look into? Whom do you meet? What metrics are you most concerned about?
Well, it starts a lot in my house at the moment because I'm in a lockdown here in Australia at the moment. But one upside of that is I do get to see my kids a lot more. They're also homeschooling at the moment. But look, every day is so different. And I guess that's what I like about my role. Every day is exciting. In fact, I usually look up and the day's passed just because of how quickly we're doing things throughout the day. And I really do love my job. I call them dream jobs. And I really do think I have one. I would say, though, to unpack it a little bit, you know, my mornings I usually reserve for meetings with folks in San Francisco just because that's when I can get them at the end of the day, whether that's our leadership team or some of my peers that are based there if I'm trying to get information of what's happening. Throughout the day, I try to focus, obviously, on my team, like I mentioned, those regions, Australia, New Zealand, waking up a little bit earlier, obviously India a little bit later in the day, and then working with the regional CEOs. I want to make sure they have what they need to feel comfortable that marketing is supporting their business. But what I really like is that 1 hour, I might be deep in reviewing digital performance metrics from our websites or social media. The next, I might be looking at the latest brand assets, that TV ads or those social media videos that I've shown you. So it's really a balance of both sides of my brain, the creative and the analytical. And it's when I come and present back to those CEOs and so forth that it all comes together and I get to sort of get the art and the science of it. Throughout the day, you probably all heard that we acquired Slack and we did roll it out wall to wall last year as well. That's like a constant hum behind the scenes. You know, I'm getting updates on all sorts of projects that I can't participate in everything, obviously, but it gives me an ability to keep tabs on the team. You know, they can ask me quick questions, so I'm not slowing down any processes. And, you know, the odd bit of fun, if it's a birthday anniversary, we celebrate that as well. So, you know, very, very mixed every single day. And then I get to do fun things like this, right? I record podcasts. Actually, on Friday, I'm going in. We're recording a lot for Dreamforce, which I know maybe we'll touch on later. But they're the fun parts of the role where I get to represent the amazing team and the company.
Can you talk to us a bit about how the global marketing team is structured at Salesforce? You know, how much of that is shared, centralized? How much of that gets decentralized to different regions? And also give us a sense of how your own team is structured over here. What capabilities and skill sets do you have on your team here?
Yeah, look, it's so different, right, in every company. And I would say what you do know about Salesforce is that every 6 months, everything changes. So, you know, it's for good reason, right? Because we see opportunity, things don't always make sense. We're very matrix. But globally, Sarah Franklin is our CMO. She's got a couple of centralized functions like brand and digital. And that's because we really want to keep that consistent, right? She also has a leader for what we call the clouds, right? We've got all of our clouds. And so that's basically product marketing, like we referred to before. But outside of that, it's completely broken up into regions, right? So I look after Asia Pac, but I have peers for Latin America. EMEA is broken up into a couple of regions. The UKI, which is United Kingdom, is an island, is its own. And that's how the world sort of splits itself up there. Of course, I try to keep as much of the ability that we have locally, but we need support from some of those functions for sure. In terms of my team, like I mentioned, I've got those regional leaders, but just like the US, I give them some support functions as well. I have a lead for digital, which really centralizes that. But she has on her team a representative, India, ANZ, ASEAN, so that they can make sure that the priorities are represented. Another one is a lead for what we call our strategic experiences and our executive engagement. So all our events, all of our C-suite activities. And last but not least, I have a leader for our marketing operations, which really runs all the email and everything we run, all of our ancillary programs, our reporting, everything that we do. So that's kind of the lay of the land. But the good thing I like about it is we have people all over the region, right? I've got people actually based in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in many parts of India, actually, many parts of Australia. And at the moment, I'm being asked a lot about New Zealand. Australia is so much bigger than New Zealand. Unfortunately, most people tend to gravitate to Australia. But yeah, that's how the team's made up. I would say that overall, though, it's a constant dance of, you know, how that works between global and us. And one part that I didn't touch on is we acquire companies. And so we've acquired MuleSoft, which is the integration platform. We've acquired Tableau, which is a business intelligence platform. Now, of course, we talked about Slack, but you know, those teams originally kind of stay intact. And then over time, they kind of fold in into the team as well.
Just a follow-on question there while we're on the team structure. Could you also just touch upon what your interaction or structure is with sales? You have a counterpart, I'm assuming, as well in your region. And do you have sort of like a handoff, a lead-off process with the sales in APAC? And typically, what numbers, metrics do you review constantly with this team?
Like I mentioned, that growth priority I talked about before, we are joined at the hip with our sale. We call them distribution. It's our sales team. So I actually have several counterparts in sales because of these local CEOs, right? I've got a CEO of India. I've got a CEO of ANZ. I've got a leader for China, so and ASEAN. So what I try to do there is those regional leaders I have, they sit on the leadership team for the sales team, right? So they're always there when sales is discussing their numbers so that we have a seat at the table. course, for them, you know, metrics like the revenue, what we call the annual contract value, which is the SaaS model, right, is what they look at. But of course, they care a lot about the pipe. And they're the metrics that we share. So, you know, what pipe has been created overall, you know, we like to track a percentage of contribution to that pipe, even though that's really more for us because they really only care about all pipe. There's many levers, and obviously Salesforce invented a lot of this stuff, right? But we have many levers about how much open pipe we have, when that pipe's going to land, what by segment is it? Is it new logo? Is it an existing account? Is it an expansion? What stage is it in the pipe? So we look at it by so many ways and forms. What I'd tell my team, though, is that the sales metrics are our metrics, right? We share the same ones. When we have our meeting, we can look at it from all sorts of other shapes and forms so that we're comfortable what we're doing and I can apply pressure where I need to or put up and down levers. But we try to have as much as possible the same language as sales. Otherwise, you know, there's distrust that forms. Beyond that, though, I would say there's more than just pipe, right? Like our sales team want to grow awareness, right? They want those brand awareness ads on YouTube so people know our brands. We recently sponsored Australian Open, which I know tennis is big in India as well. So people would have seen our signage there, right? People always ask about cricket. So that's probably maybe in the future. There's a lot of levers that people want there. On the other side, the softer touch, I would say our executive engagement. You know, people want to have, even if they're not selling something, they want to be in front of local C-suite leaders. And so they look to the metrics that we have around, you know, titles and percentages of titles that are joining our campaigns and are they engaging in the roundtables that we have and so forth like that. So there's many, many ways. There's no shortage of numbers in the team, I will say for sure. But it's really important that your team understands like what the hierarchy of those are, because I don't want to hear that blog visits went up when the sales team didn't meet their quota, right? So they're the things that I try very hard to align with the team.
Leandro, Salesforce recently launched its seventh edition of State of Marketing Report, which has insights and trends for over 8,200 global marketers. What would you say are your top three learnings from this report?
Yeah, it's a huge report. So I'd recommend everyone to go and check it out. It's a free report. But the one that stuck out at me was, and it's because it's close to my heart, like 88% of the CMOs that answered a question in that report said that they must transform their marketing in order to be competitive. And that just blew me away. That's basically saying that every single marketer has to rethink how to do marketing. Can you imagine if you told a doctor they had to rethink how to do their day-to-day, right? It's like night and day. And so I think that amount of change is just incredible. And that's exciting as well. That's an opportunity. But when I dug into that in India in particular, 91% of the folks from India said that their digital engagement strategy had already completely changed, you know, during this pandemic. So they've not done what they've done before. They're completely changing it. And, you know, I think we're seeing things like digital channels that before were emerging, like OTT ads, podcast ads, all these things that maybe would have been a footnote in slide 7, now are like page 1 of the report. Like, how do we amplify these things? So that was a big one. The second was around data, right? We know we've got so much more data, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily can make better decisions on it. And one of the questions was around how many data sources marketers had. And they said that 40% of them have more data sources on average in 2022, which is basically the close of this year, than they did just 2 years ago. So almost a doubling of the number of sources they had, but only 33% of them were satisfied with their ability to do anything with it. So like a third of the folks that responded don't even quite know how to really leverage what's in front of them today. And I think that's a tremendous waste, right? I think there's no point collecting that information almost if you can't use it. So that's something that I think is an opportunity for everyone to work out how they can really become a data champion. Like I mentioned before, in my meetings, we have data about how we work with sales. There's no point going more and more and more metrics if you haven't really standardized what you're going to do with that data. What does that mean? Increasing the literacy of your teams and how they understand that data and can leverage it. We, of course, have some great tools, but you know, even those tools require people to learn how to use them and then how to drive insight from them. And then I'd say the last one, which is kind of relevant to that, is that you know, marketers have to keep preparing for the future, right? And one of the percentages there was that only 44% said that the skills training they were receiving at work was adequate. that's something that I think about all the time. Like I said, my first priority is looking after my team. And if I know we're going to new sources of digital tactics and my team doesn't know how to do that, that's a problem. So I can either hire new people, which doesn't help me with the folks I have, or I can skill them up. So I think people need to consider that the reskilling thing is real, and it's not just you import folks from other skill bases. And that's why I was really proud. I'm sure some of you are aware of Trailhead. It's our online free training platform. But for many, many years, it was designed for admins and programmers, basically. We call them sort of architects and developers. But now we launched a marketer career path, which meant that for the first time, you can go on Trailhead and learn how to get digital skills for marketing. Like, how do you become an email marketer? How do you become a paid digital marketer? And I think that's really important. So there's no shortage of tools and places to go, but I think leaders have to make sure that they're not putting that to the side, right? They're prioritizing it, because it's very easy to focus on the now and hire a short-term solution.
A follow-up to that, Leandro, from a digital marketing point of view, video content, be it pre-produced or live streams, is extraordinarily popular these days, with more than 9 in 10 marketers at least planning its use, was one of the insights from your 7th edition of State of Marketing Report. What particularly in this space have been your key observations?
Yeah, I think you'd have to be under a rock to say that video isn't exploding, right? And I think social channels like YouTube, you know, Instagram, I look at my kids, right? They're like flicking through their stream. And if it isn't a video, and if it isn't a really short video, they're not watching it, right? So snackable video is definitely the future. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know that the typical TED used to be 18 minutes, the TEDx talk. And I think now they're saying that they're going to reduce that because just people's attention has just gotten shorter, right? It's crazy. So for me, it's that change in behavior, and it's a learned behavior, right? Because we used to sit through much, much longer content. And then the other trend that I'm noticing is that globally, just the number of people that can watch video. So I know in India, I pulled a report recently that said that you have 356 million mobile video viewers. That's huge. Like, that's an amazing market. And 62% of them watch videos on their mobile devices. So brands are definitely picking up on this. And I would say the other stat that I've been looking into, which is very interesting to me, is that, you know, social media platform usage has doubled, right? From 1.5 hours to 4 hours a day. So it just means that not only are people watching more shorter, snackable video, there's just so much more appetite for it. And so for me, not only in India, but globally as well, it's like there's such a huge opportunity for video. Historically, that's been dominated by the YouTubes of the world. But as marketers, I think we always need to look to the future. And I know in many parts of APAC and India included, there's new local independent kind of content creators like yourselves. And then there's new channels then and aggregators. So I'm always looking at where is those destination sites going to be? Is it the big ones, you know, the YouTubes, the Instagrams, the Facebooks? Are there new platforms? And, you know, how can I be one of the first ones to get to one of those platforms is always what I'm thinking about.
We also noticed that Salesforce recently announced Salesforce Plus, a new streaming service for live experiences and original content series. Can you tell us what is this all about and how did this idea originate and how was it brought to life?
You know, one of the things I love about Salesforce is we do look to the consumer world for inspiration. So if you've read Behind the Cloud, that was Mark Benioff's like first book that he did. He talks about why the mission when they started Salesforce with Parker was, now, why is it so much harder to buy business software than it is to buy a book on Amazon? Right? Like, that was the kind of the genesis, right? It's like, I can go on to Amazon, I can find a book, I hit buy it now and I get it. Whereas software was like enterprise agreements with big companies and then deployments. And so that was kind of a little bit of the mantra for the company. Now, if you look during this pandemic times, we've been looking at the consumption of our content, and we know that white papers, ebooks, those things have just been trending down, right? Like we've talked about before, people are being trained to get instant gratification and very targeted, engaging content. So we were looking at this combined with futures, you know, going to be cookieless, right? Where you need to have more first party data. And at the same time, there's the rise of all these platforms like Disney Plus Hotstar, Netflix, all these things that are happening. So we were thinking, well, these are the same people that are doing those things as to buying business software. There's no two different types of people. Like, I watch all those things too. Right. So we started thinking about that. And then we realized, you know, we had led a series called Leading Through Change during the pandemic. And, you know, we'd done 70 episodes and it had 700 million views. Right. And so it clearly was a very successful series. And so we were thinking, you know, what can we learn from that? And how can we double down? How are we going even further on that? So we started looking at our event portfolio. You know, we do a lot of events all around the world. They're high quality. And we do a lot of things as well on the video side, but they weren't together. They were sort of kind of disparate. And we'd never thought of it almost in this broadcast capacity. So very quickly, actually, I don't think it took very long. I'd say probably in the order of weeks. We were inspired by, you know, the Netflixes of the world, the Teds of the world, the Disney Plus Hotstar. And we really decided to ask the question is, what if we could do our own thing, but make it uniquely Salesforce? So we really came up with this idea for Salesforce Plus, which was going to bring together the best of our live experiences, which are our events, as well as our original content that we were starting to do through Leading Through Change. We also launched a few other series like Inflection Point and Boss Talks and Connections, all these other series, and bring it together, make it personalized, but for business users, right? There really isn't that many places where you can go to get thought leadership in sales, service, marketing, commerce, or as an IT developer. So that was really the niche we found. And it's been a few weeks now that we announced it. And we're really, really excited about what the future can hold for it.
So do you look at this more as a content play? Or is this like sort of changing the playbook itself for you guys from a point of what marketing does at Salesforce?
If I told you that we knew all the answers, I think I would be telling a few fibs there because it's new, right? It's completely new. And we like to lead from the front. I think what's interesting about it is just like Netflix and all those other services, it's tied to an actual user. So unlike when you go on a YouTube or on a Twitter where we don't really know if you're watching it, right? Maybe you can have your own version hosted, but then the scale is reduced. Here, we actually will know, just like Netflix knows, who's logging in, what they're watching, and we're really going to learn a lot about our subscriber base. It's going to be free, so you know there's a very low bar. It's not like we're asking people to pay or a monthly subscription. But of course, we want high-quality, compelling content, like you said. But it does allow us the opportunity to rethink, like instead of maybe doing that physical event, should I do a live series and dedicate it to the CMO or dedicate it to an admin of our tool? And I think it's going to mean that we can rethink many, many things. So I don't think we know exactly where it's going to go. Like most things at Salesforce, we kind of put it out there. But what I do know is that it's fueling a lot of creativity in the company. And that's what gets me excited. And I know that's what gets the team excited as well.
Yeah, I know a lot of marketing teams will be watching out for this one.
I'm sure they will be.
Leandro, an event obviously that one always immediately correlates with Salesforce is Dreamforce. How are you guys reimagining Dreamforce this year, particularly post-pandemic? What are the big changes that you are seeing?
So for the folks that don't know Dreamforce that well, to put it simply, it's the single largest event that we run across the globe at Salesforce. It's also the biggest enterprise tech event in the world. It started in 2003. So this is actually Dreamforce 19, if you're counting. And we like to think of it as a family reunion, right? It's where we bring all of our stakeholders. And by that, I really mean all the stakeholders. So our customers, our partners. If you've been to Dreamforce in the past, you'll see nuns and monks and, you know, celebrities. It's really everyone that's part of the Salesforce family. And it's a celebration of our trailblazers, a celebration of our customer success. Now, for me personally, it holds a very special place in my heart because when I ran corporate messaging, I did lead the Dreamforce keynote for many, many years. So I would work with CEO. I would also work with the executive leadership in developing what was the message going to be, what were the stories we were going to highlight. So the last Dreamforce that happened physically was in 2019, was when I was still doing my role of which I led. So very, very special place. And so now as we think to the future and what we're doing this year, I couldn't be more excited, right? Last year was a bit of a weird year. We were in a transition year with the pandemic. But this year, what I love is that we're putting Dreamforce on Salesforce Plus. And so what this means is that, yes, in the past, we would get 170,000 people in person, which is huge, right? But it's not all of our customer base by any shape or form. We're way bigger than that. So what we now have for the first time is that every single one of our customers for free will be able to have a front row seat to Dreamforce, right? The luminary speakers, and we have some awesome speakers, right? The trailblazer success stories from our customers, the innovations. In fact, there's going to be over 100 hours of content. And like I mentioned, because it's personalized, you'll be able to do it by role, by industry, by topic. And so it's really, it's a whole new level of Dreamforce. Now, what I'm excited about, and this is selfish because I'm in the APAC region, is we're going to take over a particular moment in time in our time zone. So historically, Dreamforce happens if you're in Mumbai when you're sleeping. Now, at 8:30 a.m. on the 22nd of September, you'll be able to tune into Salesforce Plus. You'll open it up and we will have a kickoff from APAC, right? And in that show, we will feature Arundhati, who's our CEO of India. We'll feature some of the other regional leaders. We're going to have Titan Watches, which is an amazing story from India, as well as some of the others from around the region, local trailblazers. And we're going to do that as a countdown, and then we're going to go to the opening main show. So I'm really excited about it. That's some of the recording that I mentioned earlier. And I think our customers are going to love it.
Yeah, and I think this deserves another podcast by itself. You know, just going through the programming, you know, how you guys are sort of thinking through the conceptualization and production of this. Fascinating.
And I would say, if I would be remiss, my India team will probably be upset if I didn't mention, we do have a very special part. They just launched, it's called Trailblazer Talks. That's part of the program. And there's going to be like 11 conversations with senior leaders, with Arundhati and interviewers. It's going to be very, very exciting. So very, very local stories that are relevant to the region in India. So I'm very excited about that. I think they just recorded a few of the first ones. So it's going to be very cool.
Sounds wonderful, Leandro.
Right. That's a wrap on our podcast. Thank you, Leandro, for joining in. This has been a lot of fun.
My pleasure. You know, anytime. And I hope that some of the folks got a couple of takeaways from everything I shared today.
I'm sure we all did. Thank you, Leandro. Hey, that was our conversation with Leandro Perez, CMO APAC at Salesforce. Thank you for joining us. And if you've liked what you've heard, don't forget to subscribe to us. We're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all major podcast networks. Until our next episode, this is me, Adil Bandukwala.
And Kaushik Satish, signing off for the Great Indian Marketing Show.